Blog Talk Radio.
From the thump of the Trump helicopter to the craziness of the D's Nuts campaign, and broadcasting from a small but powerful mobile burrito wagon. Kelly O'Connell, it's 21st of August and 6:06 in the morning. I do not have the text machine with me, so you're going to have to go. You're going to have to call in today. Well, today is Open Subject Friday. Got a very kind of a weird story. You've either heard about it, you're going to hear about it. So I'll play a little bit. D's Nuts is running for president and is polling at 9%, I think, in North Carolina. Anyway, here's a little clip on from CBS News, D's Nuts.
Election, there are always a few candidates people have never heard of. Typically, they don't really gain any ground. They just eventually fade away. This time, though, presidential candidate, and I mean, I'm not making this part up. This guy, this candidate, this name, D's Nuts, is polling among the other major contenders. Mr. Nuts came to prominence when he showed up in a survey earlier this month with 9% support. Not only is D's Nuts appearing in polls, he's also has a platform and is outlining for ballot access in every state on his website. Nuts declared himself an independent in his FEC paperwork, but his website says he would consider running for nomination from any of a wide number of parties. While the campaign might seem like a joke, Nuts has actually laid out some some concrete policy positions. He supports deporting all illegal immigrants, also supports abortion and gay marriage. D's Nuts also supports the Iran nuclear deal, wants to end oil subsidies, and give voting rights to people who live in U.S. territories. The man behind D's Nuts, 15-year-old Brady Olson. He's from a tiny town in Iowa that has fewer than 200 people. And, you know, not that it really matters, but the Constitution's Article 2, Section 1 mandates that only those aged 35 and older can be president. So you see, D's Nuts is probably not going to do it this year, but maybe in 20 years, we'll see him back on the ballot.
How about never? But he does sound like the Donald Trump of his generation. I guess he's going to be a sophomore in college, or pardon me, a sophomore in high school. But
how did Apple be top their all-in
he's taking
burger?
High college classes, so he's probably a 16-year-old in the body of a 14-year-old or whatever. But anyway, kind of
interesting. That's a lot of flavor for a low price, only at Applebee's.
Scoop of this sensation. All right, so what I want to get into next. Well, let's just go over a few of the headlines and just see what is out there for you. Caitlyn, alias Bruce Jenner. Bruce Genital. Caitlyn Genderbender. Bruce Genital is, they're looking at prosecuting Mr. Genital for running into a lady from behind. And when I read the report on it, I couldn't really figure out what had happened. I'd have to go back and find another article. The article that I was reading just didn't add up. But
you've never had a burger made like Applebee's,
driving down the
handcrafted,
the road
freshly
ground,
seared, flavor bomb piled high, original one of a kind all-in burgers with free refills of fries and a surprisingly low bill.
He's behind
only
this lady
at Applebee's.
He's not really in a Prius. He's not really paying attention.
The FBI this
and
morning
so he
is
runs
investigating
into
the cyber
the back
attack
of her
on the
car,
cheating
and basically,
website,
that's not what
Ashley
killed
Madison,
her. He pushed her out into the road, and they said, and then she got plowed into by
private information
one of those
with a
military vehicles
data dump.
People drive
but
around.
Experts warn
like
some victims could face a lot more than divorce. CBS
so anyway, so they're
Richard
they're
Cleveland
going to be
good morning.
Good morning.
Looking
so
at prosecuting him, it's about 50-50 right now.
We have to remember that after we have our first reaction
that they would actually
adulterers,
send the guy
they deserved it. Oh, this
you
website,
know,
they deserved
elderly.
It. Push that aside. Let the lawyer and me talk. Hacking is a crime.
But they said he was
and
not
it is
speeding,
a bad
but he was speeding
this was
for
a
the
highly encrypted site. These hackers got into that site. So, of course, the FBI is looking. If they could get into this, they could get into any site. If we take the morality out of it, let's look at, say, a retail site, a Walmart, a Target.
Story
so if you get hackers who can get in, get your name, address, your email address, part of your credit card information, and then put you up for blackmail,
and all those fantastic
say if you don't pay us money, we're
Marvin
going
Gaye
to
changed
all this
his name from
G A
Y
to
G A Y E.
In essence, that's what happened.
He was a very troubled person.
Is there legal liability?
Yes, I think there is legal liability,
tried to
and I think it goes
the head
right
of the
against that
House of Prayer
the
Church,
company insisted
like that.
That it was secure. Obviously, they can't ensure
he was
that.
A very
we know nothing
person.
Today is secure.
He was
but ultimately a they
fiend.
Did have warning for
a
one
total
month.
Pervert,
they left
but,
that site
a very
set
talented
there
guy
were people who paid $19 a person to have something called pay delete, get your name off.
June 47, entertaining from start to finish. Yep. Is bond and bond rolled into one. Hitman, Agent 47, rated R.
And this is from ESPN. Marvin Gaye, what's going on? And if I could just get these clips to play, I'd be happy. But anyway, I'll have to reboot this one. There's some other sports stories. Well, here we go. Please.
Email
play.
Addresses were linked to government accounts? That's sort of baffling to me.
Well,
why would you use your .gov account when you're signing up?
All right. This is another story that I'm not going to get into right now, but I do think that we've got the Marvin Gaye thing here. I told you about this yesterday. There is a dump of a bunch of emails. What do you think about this? There's this website that is designed for people to cheat on, Ashley Madison. Now, there's already, I mean, anybody could go to any website for dating and cheat there. So you didn't necessarily need a website for cheaters, but they made this website up, Ashley Madison. It was designed just for adulterers. And so now they've kind of outed this information. They hacked into the system and said, unless you take this website down, we're going to take all of the information of these people and drop it on the internet. The founders, having a large economic interest in this, decided not to do this. So they did dump a lot of information out there from millions of accounts. So could the Ashley Madison be sued for not closing their site down? Here's this Marvin Gaye thing. It's coming, folks. I don't even know if it's worth it. All right, let's take a break here. A little more Marvin Gaye for you. Kelly O'Connell, 614-523-1450 to call in. We don't have the text machine here, but 614 on the 21st. We will be right back.
Kirk here.
The campaign releasing its first policy documents on his plan for immigration. It's the issue that really ignited his initial burst of support. Corner, we bring you a story of Detroit.
Time to put you on the Sports Nation warm seat.
Okay. Funniest person that you have not heard
of? Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
What do you think it is about Jay Cutler that gets people?
Al Jackson. Al Jackson is super funny.
Is he on, he's on your bus?
Al Jackson
fools
me sometimes.
Right.
He has a new hour special out.
Okay, yeah. Al Jackson. I always want to be ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
All right, so I just got some random stuff last night that I thought you might find entertaining. Here is Hannibal Buress. Now, Hannibal Buress is a comedian. He's kind of laid back. He's an African-American, a comedian who had called out Cosby, actually, and said, you know, I don't see why Cosby is doing all this stuff when he's a serial molester or whatever. By the way, I read another heartbreaking Cosby story last night about him drugging and raping this girl. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any end. And then what's this guy, Apatow? This guy, I guess he's an actor or comedian or something, said that Bill Cosby has raped more women than I've had sex with. So kind of puts a emphasis on the point. Here is Hannibal Buress talking about Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler's the quarterback that a lot of people hate the guts of. For the Bears, the Chicago Bears.
As a Bears fan,
yeah.
What do you think it is about Jay Cutler that gets people so upset?
His face. It's just something about his face. And I'm not a heavy Bears fan. I follow the Bears, and I'm from Chicago. But I think it's just when you look at his face, it looks like he doesn't care. And he probably does care, but his face. Have you seen all those memes? They just put a cigarette in his mouth, and he face. It's something about his face. When you look at his face, you're like, man, I don't like that dude. Yeah. But he's probably
a good guy.
He's probably super nice. Like my resting face, people think I'm angry all the time.
That's true.
And I'll be really.
All right, so Jay Cutler, I looked up this meme. A meme is like a picture or whatever that is put on the internet. And if you Google Cutler, Google Cutler cigarette, it is the most hilarious thing. Jay Cutler always looks like he doesn't give a rat's on quarter, and he's looks disinterested. He looks bored. He just looks like he doesn't care, and a good looking guy and everything. He went to, I guess, Vanderbilt, but you stick a cigarette in his mouth, kind of drooping out. It looks absolutely perfect. All right. Now, speaking of sports stories, I've got a story on Tebow here. I am working my way back to Marvin Gaye, although my computer's not really cooperating here. But the story of the day is that Chip Kelly, formerly the coach of my old team or my old school, Oregon, has said pleased with Tim Tebow's his development as a quarterback. And so they say one of the things that Chip Kelly likes to do is to work on salvation projects. So Tebow being a Christian, that's just absolutely perfect. But here we go.
Down there getting a standing ovation in South Philadelphia yesterday.
Yeah, he had to go.
When you run the read option, he was pretty effective. But when he got into the pocket, the same thing kind of happened again. Now, he's playing with some young offensive linemen. I understand that. But he can't take sacks. He's got to be smarter than that. He's played enough football now to know in those situations, I got to get rid of the ball. But he stared it down again. But the read option, he's pretty good.
I was going to say, do you think that rule change on the extra point all of a sudden maybe justifies Chip Kelly keeping him for a game?
I would argue that's why Chip went and got him, because he recognized that the two-point conversion is going to become a bigger factor, not only this year, but going forward.
Yeah.
The commissioner wants the two-point conversion back in the game. And so there's going to be this rule is for this year only. It's probably going to get further tweaked next year. So he plays a role there. Short yardage and goal line, he plays a role. You have a limited guy physically in Sam Bradford who cannot take hits in short yardage, who cannot run the read option because you're exposing those knees.
Sure.
Tim Tebow is the perfect limited backup with a limited skill set. Perfect Chip Kelly quarterback. Does he fit for anybody else? Probably not. Is he a professional quarterback who can be a starter? No, but he has a perfect spot for himself there in Philadelphia.
So anyway, it looks like Tim Tebow is going to make it in Philadelphia, and he is pushing out. What's the kid from USC? Blonde-haired kid, anyway. All right, here's the much-heralded Marvin Gaye NFL tryout story. Please play.
Marvin Gaye, the Prince of Motown, once upon a time had NFL dreams of his own, hoping to earn a spot with the Detroit Lions before the 1970 season. For more on what transpired, we welcome in Justin Tinsley from The Undefeated. He's the writer. You have a story out on what many are hearing for the first time. Tell us how Marvin Gaye and the Lions once crossed paths.
Well, it all started around, I have to say, the summer of 1967. Lim Barney, he was the Lions' second-round draft pick that year out of Jackson State. He was playing golf at Palmer Park Golf Course, which is one of the most popular golf courses in Detroit at that time. That's also where a lot of the black celebrities used to play. Joe Louis, Smokey Robinson, The Temptation, a lot of the Motown acts, they used to play over there. And Lim Barney was just like, hey, I'm gonna throw this against the wall, see if it sticks. And he went over to the clubhouse and he asked the clubhouse attendees, does Marvin Gaye live nearby? And they told him he actually lived like a mile away. So he went to knock on the door. And before he could introduce himself, Marvin Gaye knew who he was, because Marvin Gaye was a diehard sports fanatic. And from there, they instantly clicked. And he introduced them to Mel Farr shortly thereafter. And Marvin started coming to a lot of the games at Tiger Stadium, because that's where the Lions used to play at that time. And he became a regular. He used to visit the players and their families after the game at Petey Larko's restaurant, where he'd entertain them, have drinks, have food with them and everything. So they really just instantly clicked. And that's kind of how the bond formed.
Yeah, so they bonded, they formed a friendship. So why was the friendship between Marvin Gaye, Mel Farr, and Lev Barney an important topic for you to write about?
Well, I think a lot of times today in sports, you see people like Jay-Z and LeBron, or maybe like Drake and LeBron, or you can go as far back as people like Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X, or Medgar Evers and Bill Russell. I think a lot of times these entertainers have these fascinating friendships, and this one in particular, it spawned two great stories. Lem Barney and Mel Farr, they're actually credited with background vocals on Marvin's What's Going On, which may be, give or take maybe two or three other songs, his most important song ever created. And a lot of issues in that song, they resonate still today, whether it's police brutality, whether it's wage disparities, whether it's international relations. And they actually convinced Marvin record the song, because at first he was going to give it to a group he was working with at the time, and they convinced him, like, no, this is the song you need to be doing, this is what you need to do. Because at the time Marvin was in a sort of a personal funk, because Tammy Terrell, his recording partner, had just died, his brother had just gotten back from the Vietnam War, and he wasn't really gung-ho about singing about joy and happiness when in his eyes his world was crumbling. So that was the song he needed to break him out of a funk, and he said, the only way I'm gonna do it is if you guys do background vocals with me. And when you listen to the song, they're the first voices you hear on the song. And they were credited with a gold plaque that Marvin gave them.
Who knew? Who knew? I don't think a lot of people knew that. That's really interesting. But what was it about Marvin that endeared him so much to Mel and Lem, both as an artist and as a person? What do you think?
He was just a genuine person. Mel Farr, before he passed away earlier this month, he had nothing but glowing things to say. He is the most genuine person he ever met in his life. Lem Barney speaks so highly of him, and he was just a friend. Obviously, Marvin was a couple of years older than they were, and he just instantly befriended them. He didn't want anything out of them. He just wanted friendship. Marvin really valued friendship, according to what they told me, and he just reciprocated everything, and they just wanted to give him the world, because he pretty much gave them the world at that point in their lives.
So they certainly had a healthy, good friendship, but did anyone besides Marvin believe he would actually make the team?
No, I think the only person who thought he might make the team was Marvin. I talked to Coach Joe Schmidt, who was the coach of the Lions at that time, and he was like, well, he asked Marvin, he was like, well, do you have any footage from high school? And Marvin was like, no, I didn't play in high school. He was like, well, what about college? He was like, I never went to college. So he was like, Marvin, what makes you think at 31 years old you can just walk on a field and play football? But Marvin had that much confidence in himself. So, and even Mel Farr, rest his soul, he was like, Marvin was never the most gifted athlete in the world. He was an incredible singer.
Well, can't argue with that. Okay, so anyway, thought you might find that interesting. Marvin Gaye was an unbelievable talent. Apparently, his dad was really a very sadistic person, and so he used to beat his son for no reason, and he wouldn't just beat him, but he'd pull off his belt. He'd say, Marvin, go in your room, I'm going to spank you or whatever. He'd pull off his belt and kind of rattle it by the door, and then come back in 5 minutes later and kind of, keep him in there for like an hour. So anyway, Marvin Gaye, believe it or not, turned out to be a very kinky guy, undoubtedly related to his crazy dad. But and his dad ended up shooting him and killing him in Los Angeles. Anyway, Kelly O'Connor, 628. We're going to come back. I've got a couple of stories. I have an unbelievable story about what's going on across the border from Arizona. It is so scary what's going on down there, and the fact that the United government either doesn't know, or obviously it does know, but doesn't really care what's going on in the desert. And their desert is not too much different from ours. It's on the border of Mexico, and it's just we need to change this policy that we've currently got, which is just crazy. But anyway, 629, you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in, 523-1450, and we'll be right back.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, this is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right on.
Hey, man, what's your name? Mother, there's too many of you to try.
It's Kelly here. Now, let me read you a few of the titles of these stories and to see if it gets your blood pumping a little bit. Arizona Sheriff, Drug Cartels Control American Soil 30 Miles from Phoenix. Feds hide fiscal details about vast operation to resettle illegal alien miners. All right. What I think is going on is that When the president was running for office and he said he was going to change the country, and his experience in life was basically as a student and as a law professor and as a community organizer. So he did community organizing before he got into law school, and then after he got into law school, his one case involved Acorn. He represented Acorn in the one case that I found that he ever entered into. He's not a working attorney. But he came in with this idea that he was going to change everything. And the president, even though he taught constitutional law, is not really a constitutionalist. He is someone, and I think it's because of the fact that this experience that he had with community organizing. Community organizing is kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like political guerrilla warfare, where you go in and you figure out how the system runs, and then you get the system to basically kind of go against itself. So one of the ideas that they had was for the notion of Cloward Piven, which is you get so many, there's like a lot of people out there that could get into social welfare, but they're not in it for whatever reason. If you got everybody into social welfare, on Medicare, Medicaid, Section 8, food stamps, everything that you can get people into, you would you would bankrupt the system. And if you did that, you would force a revolution so that the country would have to become socialist, because the system would be bankrupt and the government would have to come in as the major domo, as the one entity that could take care of everybody, because the system had failed. So anyway, what I think that Obama is doing is that he is trying to so anyway, the model in the minds of these people is a revolution, because that is behind all of the leftism, is the need for a revolution, because governments tend to be stable, and so you have a revolution. The revolution makes it possible to make all these changes. So that's why when the president was talking with what's that guy's name, Rahm Emanuel, and Rahm Emanuel's, there was the financial crisis, let no crisis go to waste. That's really kind of a Marxist idea. It's a socialist it's an idea that says our movement feeds off of revolutions. So we've got to make sure that if there is a crisis that comes up, we jump on it and we put in changes. So, and it doesn't matter what, if the crisis was accidental or on purpose. So anyway, the upshot is that I think that they're bringing in all these people and resettling them across the country is that once again, it became obvious that the country in some ways was becoming more conservative. So you've got all of these state houses across the United States, the Congress, the state and the Senate, the Senate and the House in many of these states, after the president came in, flipped from Democrat to Republican. So there was this grassroots movement in the direction of a more conservative government. So to fight back against that, the president brings in basically tens of millions of illegals during his time, and that then these people are default Democrats, because what they understand is that the Democratic Party is more sympathetic to them. The Democratic Party will bring them in, give them IDs and driver's licenses, and we'll put them on social welfare immediately. All right, so that is what I think is happening. So you've got 400,000 births in America each year from these illegals. Now there's a fight over who is going to decide if these babies that are born here, these anchor babies, should be citizens. So there's just so many things that are kind of going on. So there was a report that came out 70 miles inside the border. The Mexican cartel is running the Arizona desert. America doesn't have operational control of U.S. territory. Now, this is not coming out of Sheriff Joe. It's coming out of Paul Babu. He's the Tucson president, or the Tucson sheriff. So anyway, just kind of looking through these stories to see if I can play some for you pretty quick here. So anyway, we've got the government has decided at a national level, at a federal level, that they're going to do everything that they can to not just make it easier for these people to come in, but they're going to relocate the children. So it's like there is a civil war that's been started without weapons, but there's a civil war. Our government is waging war against our way of life and our democratic republican, really a republican theory of government. And let's take a break here, because I want to play a clip or two of this stuff for you and kind of let you see what's going on. But that's it. It is an attempt to have a revolution in such a way that without firing a shot, you bring in so many people, 400,000 or 500,000 people a year, every year, that have a kind of a default towards Democratic Party, that you cause a revolution toward in the direction of socialism. That's president's belief system. That's what I, from what I've gathered from his statements and his public policy. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell. It is 6:41 on the AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 to call in. 523-1450 to call in. We'll be right back.
Brother, 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 there's far too many of you die. You know we can't find you.
Good morning. I'm Sheriff Paul Babbie of the Pinal County Sheriff's Office. And first, I want to.
First of all, what was the nature of your relationship with this individual?
We had seen each other privately and for some time, close to 3 years, simply in dating. And he had volunteered separately on my campaign in an unpaid status, actually was in control of our website, just a volunteer website for sheriff from my political campaign, and also started a Twitter account.
Toronto's live in Florida.
GOP presidential.
Okay, 6:44 now. 2-3-14-50 to call in. The Pope, I'll just get this out of the way here real quick. The Pope is has identified with American immigrants or illegal immigrants. And so there is some talk of him coming to America and meeting with immigrants. So a lot of people think that this Pope is a Marxist. I personally think that he shows strong inclinations in that direction, but all right, so be that as it may, let me just play a little clip of two things here, one of which is there's just so much information here. Ben Carson met with Paul Babu, and he took him on. And Paul Babu is gay. It's kind of interesting, but he's this kind of conservative gay sheriff. Pinal County, Ben Carson took a tour, and it was pointed out to him these encampments and everything. So there is this statement that is out there that there has been a takeover of the ground, you know, American ground up to 70 miles an hour, you know, within 30 miles of Phoenix. Now, and here's some of the headlines. 70 miles inside the border, America doesn't have operational control of U.S. territory. 400,000 children born to illegals each year, given automatic citizenship. Now, there was an arrest made for an underwater tunnel across the border, and they found a scuba smuggler with a couple of pounds, I think, of cocaine on him. But it is, I don't know, it's just absolutely stunning the danger that we have on our border, and when there are people coming across that are being allowed to stay here that are killing Americans. And the president blames it on the GOP, which as far as I know, maybe the GOP is equally guilty. The GOP is so incompetent. And that's why you've got to have outsiders like Trump and Carson come in and stir the mix up, because these these people that are in office are timid. You know, they're afraid to talk about immigration. Marco Rubio, I've got my immigration plan, which is to, his plan was to naturalize
them. We've got to keep putting wind steps between
I think the thing about Trump's plan, which is to kick everybody out, whether it's realistic or not, you got to draw a line. You got to say, this is the law, we're going to enforce the law. For people like Krauthammer, who says it's an unworkable plan, and I'm sure it technically is. I don't know how
Francis
you would
is expected
possibly
to make
capture
history during
all,
his plan visit to
capture
the
all these
United
people
States
and kick them out and then bring the good ones back. That sounds like
to address
total fantasy land. But on the other hand,
the
if you don't make that threat, what you're basically
Congress,
saying
Francis
is we have a law, and it doesn't matter. You can break the law, and then we're going
to
figure out a way to keep you here. Why do we want tens of millions of very poor and uneducated people on the soil? It doesn't make any sense to me to
going
go
out
on
for
this way, especially when you hear that the cartels have set up encampments inside of America. It's an extremely dangerous situation. I'm amazed that they haven't had done any terrorist strikes in here, because the border is porous. You know? Anyway, we'll take a break here, and I'll try to get some. There's so many of these stories here. Let me kind of boil some of this stuff down for you and crack into a few of these stories, because there's just a lot of information out there, and it's all unsettling. 649 Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450. And on AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE, we'll be right back. 523-1450.
You know we find a way to bring some loving here today.
All right, so here is here's a little bit on Babu right here on his all right, well, wait, hold on a second. Let's just so many clips here, but let's let's hear a little bit on Babu and Donald Trump being right on the illegal immigrant criminals.
According to the Pinal County, Arizona Sheriff's Office, over the July 4th weekend, illegal immigrant Manuel Perez Vasquez was reportedly driving high on drugs and crashed into a car, injuring two small children and their mother. Fortunately, no one was killed. According to police, Manuel Perez Vasquez has been deported, get this, 6 times in 3 years. Here now is the sheriff, Pinal County, Arizona. Sheriff Paul Babu is with us. Welcome back, Sheriff. Good to see you.
Thanks, Sean.
So earlier we talked to families that lost loved ones, and as is often the case, they're deported, and then they just walk across the border again. Isn't that the big part of this problem? Criminals know they can get back very easy, and they know the routes and where to go.
Absolutely, and without consequence, and that's the problem here. We see in my county this near head-on collision where this young mother and her 5-year-old son, 2-year-old baby girl, this illegal that hits her, totals her car. But you, if it was you or I, we'd get out, or any other citizen, we'd get out to find out what's going on, or maybe even call 911, right? He and a witness said 4 others fled on foot. They didn't stop to render aid or even call 911. They fled on foot. And this guy turns out not only he's impaired by drugs in this wreck 6 times. So there's a lack of consequence. So that's why none of us should be surprised that all these crimes continue to occur. And then we get people attacking us somehow saying we're not compassionate because we don't want to just have open borders. And I reject that because every year, this is a country who proudly accept more illegal immigrants than every other nation on the face of this earth combined.
And how bad for those? How accurate was Donald Trump? How accurate was he that this is a huge problem in terms of crime, et cetera? Is he right?
It is a huge problem. He's tapping into the anger that I and every American should feel. He's going a little bit broader with a brush when he characterized, you know, all of the illegals.
Well, he did say some are good people. He could have probably said it better, but I get your point.
Well,
I think
this is where, look, in my county, I've got 30% of my 400,000 people that are Mexican, Hispanic descent, that are from Mexico, largely in their lineage, that are good, decent, hardworking Americans. Yet it's these criminal illegals, 30,000 last year that were released. And the numbers you quoted earlier about the murderers and the rapists, who can justify the fact that they remain in our country? What do we think they're going to do? And we don't catch, when we catch one of these murderers, it's not the first time that they've committed all kinds of other crimes. So absolutely, we're getting what this administration has served up.
A sanctuary country, Obama's sanctuary country. All right, thank you.
All right, so here is here's just a little analysis on whether Trump's plan would work. I don't see how it would work, but I think to put the threat out there and take some of the illegals and very visibly return them to Mexico would send a message to all of these people flooding across the border. The message is now you come, you stay, you'll be relocated, you'll have a place to live, you'll have food. You can go get a job. It's true madness, and it is done with malign intent, in my opinion, to undermine the democratic process and overturn the Republican institutions and to head in the direction of socialism. I cannot figure out any other possible explanation because it's so dangerous, and the president seems so hell-bent on executing this policy. Here's a question, would Trump's immigration plan work?
Well, Donald Trump catching a whole lot of heat for his immigration plan that calls for the deportation of all illegal immigrants and an end to birthright citizenship. But Sheriff Paul Babu says Trump's plan is necessary, and it does make a whole lot of sense. Sheriff, you're right there in the thick of it all, so I'm sure you understand the nuances of this. But there are some people who are saying that this sounds like an amazing thing. We're talking up to 10, 11 million people. We're going to round them up, handcuff them, put them on buses, and march them out of here, including screaming kids. Would this be something of a Trail of Tears Part 2, a modern-day version?
Well, Donald Trump is very bold with his plan, and this is something that he's not only channeling anger and frustration. It's like every day we're seeing people who are murdered by the violent criminals. And what he talks about in detail in his plan is to actually identify all the violent criminals, right? And these people have to be returned to their country of origin, never to return again. So there's elements of this plan that I don't think anybody could disagree with, yet there's such frustration because our government, our federal government, has proven to be completely inept, that there's law for you and I that we have to follow, and there's real consequences. Right. But if you're from a foreign country, you commit murder, guess what? They release you into our communities, and you don't have to be the sheriff to figure out what's going to happen. So it's a bold plan. It's very controversial. We'll see where it goes.
You know, and to your point, it's not just the federal government. Let's be honest about this.
Well, kind of running out of time here, but so Paul Babu is a Babu, however you pronounce it. He shaves his hair off, so he's got a chrome dome. But if you're a working sheriff, I don't see how you can have any other position on this situation. If you've got illegal people coming in with criminal records, the federal government is not doing what they can to capture them and deport them. If you're going to bring in hundreds of thousands, millions of illegals every year, how do you justify bringing in criminals and releasing them? That is the one thing that I've seen that most shows the reckless disregard that this president has towards everyday Americans. He does not identify with you or I. He wants a revolution. And if that, I mean, it's always this admission from the left. We can't persuade anyone from, you know, joining our club. So we're going to have to break the process to do it. And we're going to take a break now. We're going to come back and talk to Bob Endlich. Okay, thank you. Kelly O'Connell Show, we'll be right back.
Father, we don't need to escalate. War is not the answer, for only love can complicate. You know we've got to find a way.
How you doing today?
All right. You know, I used to be stationed at Davis-Monthan in Tucson. Tucson, Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. It's where the boneyard is. But I used to go out to Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument. There's part of that monument you can't go on now because it's closed, because it's dangerous, because there's too many illegals in our own national park. And there's a National Wildlife Refuge, same thing. You can't go there. Well, you can go there, but they have signs says. But in the Oregon Pipe Cactus, they've got a gate. They put up a gate. So we can't go where we used to be able to go. Somebody got a puppy here?
You don't miss anything.
If you've ever had a dog, you know what that is. Do you have a dog?
No, but you don't have a dog.
Yes. We have a greyhound. 80 pounds and 40 miles an hour greyhound.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fine fellow. I want to talk about methane and the new methane rules and how stupid they are.
Good morning. It's Kelly 703. And got Bob Endlich here and going to be talking about methane. Oops. Well, I don't know if something happened to the national news there, but anyway, before we get into Bob Endlich's stuff, there is a top aide of Hillary Clinton that is saying, and this is, I didn't even get into all of her problems now, but I don't really realistically think that Hillary Clinton can make it. And the reason that I'll say that is just, there's an investigation that's been going on for a couple of years. She has not cooperated with the House. And when it became possible to, in the past, she could have dealt with this and either been survived or not made it. She's dragged her investigation into the presidential race. And so now she's kind of tainted the entire field for the Democrats. There's got to be a lot of anger and hatred towards her at this point from at least part of the Democrat Party, because you're the front runner. I mean, that's like somebody dating who has a social disease, going around and sleeping with other people. I just think that it was an extremely selfish thing for her to do, because she had no idea how this thing was gonna work out. But she could have at least dealt with it a little bit earlier. Now that it's the FBI, and maybe, you know, in her defense, you could say that she didn't know that it was going to keep getting bigger. And because she's a Clinton, maybe she thought it would just go away, or the president would defend her, and the president could always go back in and pardon her if he wanted to. And I don't know. That might be his only choice, because of the fact that, let's face it, this president has a lot riding on a Democrat coming in behind him, because if it's a Republican, that Republican can immediately start to dismantle what has been going on in the presidency. But in any event, one of her aides said that basically, and this is from USA Today, that that Hillary had no idea. She invaded Libya without any idea of what might come next. And that's basically in all of this, Muslim Spring idea that you were going to support. And I wrote an article on it before, right when we started to do it. I basically argued this is a crazy idea, because the people that we're going to give liberation to are going to be religious radicals who are going to come in and ask for Sharia law. You're not going to be bringing liberty into these places. You're going to be bringing more law, chaos, and the execution of a lot of people. And that's basically what happened. But so anyway, she was flying blind as the Secretary of State, as the president was trying to lead from behind. I believe future generations are going to look very, very skeptically at a lot of the decision making during this the last 7 years. In any event, though, we have Bob Endlich here, and good morning, Bob.
Well, thanks for having me, Kelly. On Tuesday, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced new rules on methane, and it's an attempt to combat this supposedly catastrophic global warming that's ongoing. And what I'd like to do is talk about, to me, how foolish this is. And, it's a sense of turning dirt and water into mud, because there is no catastrophic warming. And and the methane part will take care of itself. And I'd like to talk about that a little bit.
Let's do it.
All right.
What is methane?
Well, methane is the natural gas we burn in our stoves and furnaces, CH4. It is a very common fuel. And it is like I said, used for fuel. And it is some of the gas that is being produced from the fracking right now in the U.S. And it's a marvelous a source of energy. Back east in the what's called the Marcellus Shale, Pennsylvania, New York, they have been able to, with horizontal drilling and fracking, to be able to go to the source rock itself and extract incredible amounts of fuel so that the price of all hydrocarbon fuels has gone down. As a matter of fact, the price of crude oil had been over $100 a year ago, and now it's down to like $40 or $41. So that's very pleasant at the pump for us. And a number of these fuels are interchangeable. Now, the reason that the people think that methane is such a big problem is because it does have a significant greater global warming potential than carbon dioxide does. People say maybe a factor of 25 or 30 more than carbon dioxide. So if in a theoretical sense, it is a potent greenhouse gas. And what they want to do is for new sources, new drilling, they want to go attack the loss of methane from the wells at the source. And in fact, there is a source of methane up in the Four Corners area, in the Farmington up to Cortez, Colorado, based on the satellite measurements. But I'll talk a little bit about why that's it's a fool's errand. One of the, you know, we have this Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and they are quite an alarmist organization. And ever since the very beginning, they have been forecasting these incredible increases in methane because of our use of fossil fuels into the free air and talk about its catastrophic global warming potential. And you'll hear Al Gore make comments about, oh, my goodness, if it warms up just a little bit, then we're going to release methane from the what's called caltrate deposits up in Alaska in the permafrost. And, you know, it's all going to be catastrophic. None of that has come to pass. As a matter of fact, every forecast that the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel has put out has busted terribly. And this has been going on since the 1990s. The forecasts are wrong. And I'd like to talk a little bit about why the forecasts are wrong. Because when these people are talking about, they're talking only about the sources and in fact, only the sources associated with our production of fossil fuels. But if you've been in a swamp, you see these bubbles coming up out of the swamp. And that's the swamp gas. That's methane. That's natural gas. And some places, they actually try to take land and cover them over and recover that natural gas and use it as a fuel source. So no matter where you go, once you get out of the immediate arid area here in the desert and start looking towards the east, any place that has swamps and wetlands, you know, we talk about the wetlands a lot, that decaying vegetation yields this methane. And, you know, it's like Chicken Man. It's everywhere that there is moist soil and swamps. The Germans had an instrument on a satellite called Envisat. Now, that satellite has died, but roughly from the year 2002 to 2012, Envisat satellites, not NASA, but the European Space Agency, and the university at Bremen had one of their physics department initiatives was to look at the trace gases from a satellite, and one of the gases they looked at was methane. And over many, many years, like 8, 9, 10 years, we have maps of what the methane was in the free air. And it's a very amazing thing to look at this map because there are vast areas of South America. There's vast areas of Central America, Africa, and the U.S. where we generate Mother Nature generates incredible amounts of methane gas, and the amount that's coming out of the four corners in the U.S. Is trivial, really trivial.
So very interesting. Let's take a little break here, and we'll come back and talk about methane a little bit more. Got Bob Endlich here, and talking about methane as a problem, and actually people produce methane too. But we'll, folks, we'll be right back. Punish me with brutality. 718, and just to let you know, the Greek Prime Minister Alex Tsipras has quit. Now, don't forget that he was a Marxist, but this is the third time that they've gone back to get loans to keep Greece open. So, you know, socialists don't know how to run economies because that's not their interest. They're looking for total domination of the society to bring in fairness, justice, that type of thing. There's an enormous outcry right now on the Iran situation, where it's turned out then the details of the Iranian situation, the agreement, this deal that we made, is that Iran is going to be self-checking, which is not really possible. All right, we've got some more incredible news about Planned Parenthood cutting into the faces of live fetuses so that they don't disturb the brain by aborting them. So do you believe that a fetus is alive? It's alive. That's why it's got to be killed. Whether it's a human is the debate, I guess, which is not much of a debate in my opinion. But they've got now they've got videos that they're talking about bringing intact brains out. So it's just every day it gets worse and worse. We've got a petition now for Jon Stewart to moderate the presidential debate. I find that guy just abominable. And I think he just needs to retire and keep his mouth shut. All right. Bob Endlich is here talking about methane. And Bob, I've got an article here from livemint.com. July was the hottest month on record, say scientists. U.S. scientists say many countries in the world's oceans experienced heat waves, with the Earth's oceans temperatures also hitting record highs. And that is, according to them, what explains El Nino and the droughts in California.
Actually, that's backwards.
All right.
What has happened now is there normally the trade winds blow the wind blow the surface of the water from South America to the Western Pacific out near Indonesia, and it accumulates heat because the sun shines on us down in the tropics. And so there's a warm pool in the Western Pacific, and as long as the trade winds blow, that continues to get warmer, and the warm pool gets larger. Well, what's happened is the trade winds have been interrupted, and westerly winds have come in instead of those northeasterly and southeasterly trade winds. And now that warm pool of water, which is about 18 inches or 20 inches higher in height, is relaxed, and that warm water has flowed across all the way across the Pacific, and it is, as we speak, up against the coast of South America.
All right, so it says the first 7 months of 2015 comprised the warmest such period on record globally at 0.85 degrees centigrade above the 20th century average and surpassing the previous record set in 2010, 0.09 degrees centigrade. What do you have to say about that?
Well, that's El Nino is spreading the warm waters. It instead of being in a pool in the Western Pacific, it has covered a large part of the Eastern Pacific, and that excess heat has run up and down the coast, and there's some off the coast of the United States right now, and that's the reason for there's much more area covered by warm water. It's not dammed up in the Western Pacific. So this is not caused by man. This is a natural variation in the distribution of temperatures across the sea.
Global warming, Bob.
No, you can tell it's not global warming because if you look at the temperatures in the greenhouse, they're not much different than they've been all along. And we have satellite measurements of those temperatures. These are surface temperatures, for the most part, water temperatures. Now, let's just go back a little bit. Back in 2010, there was this heat wave and forest fires in Russia. And people said, oh, my goodness, it's global warming causing that, the heat wave and the forest fires in Russia. And, you know, people died from too much smoke in the fires. But this has happened time and time through history. And right now, Russia is colder than average while the oceans are warmer.
And all right, so but I mean, to the average person, they see the suffering in California, the droughts. This has all been preordained. Insightful people with a prophetic gift, such as Al Gore, have pointed out that the end is nigh. They're going to get baked to death, and it seems to be working in California.
Well, that's true because we have a part of that warm water pool I'm talking about is called the Blob, and it's off the Straits of Juan de Fuca. And warm water in the ocean heats the air above the ocean, and that the air is a, you use the gas law, and warm air expands, and that changes the flow pattern. So we've got a dry pattern on the West Coast. What's interesting is there's no severe drought in New Mexico. It's, you know, last time we talked, it was less than 1%. Now it's completely gone. And so, you know, 4 years ago, they were complaining about, well, greenhouse gases are causing drought in New Mexico. No, they're not. The El Nino rains have resumed. And the question is, how long will that blob of warm water? But it's clearly not anything to do with greenhouse gases or human factors at all.
Where did the blob come from?
Well, you know, we actually don't know that.
I think originally, according to my study, it came from New Jersey. The blob tried to eat New Jersey.
Perhaps. But
wait, that's Chris Christie. What am I thinking?
I know. But the point is, there's a lot we don't know about the climate. And but if you look for the signature, the greenhouse signature of our use of fossil fuels, it's just not there. In the past, there have been 200 and 300 year droughts in California within the last several thousand years. And to say that this one is especially bad, it is bad. There's no question that it's bad. But this is a regular feature of life on the West Coast. And it depends to a large extent what the distribution of temperatures is in the ocean. I've got a friend up in Albuquerque. His name is Michael Wallace. And he shows that it's the temperature of the water off the coast that determines the rainfall patterns in a wide area of the western U.S. The Rio Grande River flow is very well correlated with those temperatures in the water off the Pacific coast.
All right, and so what's the cause, or what? I mean, what,
like I said, we have this thing called El Nino. It is a El Nino, and
what causes El Nino?
Well, what causes El Nino is a relaxing of those trade winds. So instead of having easterly winds, we have westerly winds across the tropics, and that warm water that's dammed up in the western Pacific flows across the ocean and crashes into the continent, North and South American continents, and spreads warm water over the area immediately adjacent to the coast. The pattern changes. It's perfectly natural, but it's not regular. It's irregular. It's called El Nino Southern Oscillation, but it's not an oscillation like you'd see on an oscilloscope. It's a very irregular thing, and that's what makes it very difficult to forecast. You remember last year, they said El Nino was going to be the weather event of the year, and then it misfired. But it looks like it's back and coming back, and a good chance we're going to get more precipitation the next 6 months than average.
Well, and they say it's the biggest El Nino of all time.
Well, that's yet to be determined. Certainly, it is a big event, and if you just put in ENSO on a web browser or ENSO update, you can see the temperatures and you can see the change in temperature from the average and see these things moving across the Pacific. There is an area adjacent to the equator, 5 and north of the equator, that they use as a guide to say how strong it is.
All right. So anyway, talking to Bob Endlich about the weather and El Nino and really about his fixation today is methane.
And we will have some interesting things to say about why methane is not a problem, because people just typically are talking about the sources, but there are sinks. If you're doing physics, you have to look at the sources and sinks. Same way in your budget, income and out.
Thank you, Bob. We'll be right back, folks.
Talk to me.
Bring us your battle.
So you can see.
Bring us your audacious.
We want your sticky notes, sketchbooks, and scribbles. Let's pin them to the wall. Take them around.
See what happens.
Because we're in the how do I get this startup off the ground business.
The taking your business, local business.
We're in the problem solving.
Have Bob Endlich here at 7:31, and he's talking about heat sinks and methane.
That's right. The Intergovernmental Panel and the EPA think that methane's a huge problem, and so they've made an attempt to regulate methane emissions from wells, especially new wells. The trouble that I find with that is that the forecasts of methane increase in the atmosphere have turned out to be terribly wrong. And as a matter of fact, we have people that make measurements of this. And from 2000 to about 2007, the concentration of methane actually decreased. And people were saying, oh, we thought it was going to increase, which means they don't have a clue. The thing that they don't take account of is that there are little bugs in the soil that eat methane. They're called methanotrophic bacteria, and that's the huge sink. And it turns out that these little bugs exist from the tropics up to the subarctic. The Russians have studied this, and that's the reason that that the forecasts are so bad. It's because they don't really know the sinks, but it certainly appears that methanotrophic bacteria, both in the sea and on land, are the sinks of, and the more methane we generate, that's food for them, and so they increase, and so the amount of methane in the atmosphere actually decreases. So that's the story on that.
So the methane is no big deal.
To Bob, methane's no big deal, and this attempt to try to regulate atmospheric methane and reduce its greenhouse gas potential is misguided because of the natural production of in all the swampy areas in the tropics. And if you look in the United States, we are in an area of essentially no methane production except a little bit leaking out near the Four Corners.
They say that's the worst place in the country. The Four Corners has more methane leak than anywhere. Is that true?
It probably is true, but that amount that's released is trivial when compared to the amount of methane that's produced in all the swamps and bogs in areas just when you go just, say, east of the middle of the Texas Panhandle all the way to the East Coast. There's huge areas where natural methane just bubbles out of the earth, and anyone who's been fishing in freshwater fishing areas, lakes, you can see the bubbles coming up. That's methane. And well, there's just the sources are incredible.
The will-o'-the-wisp, the famous will-o'-the-wisp is methane, isn't it, coming out of the swamps?
That's right. And it looks like it's methane combined with a little bit of phosphorus. And the phosphorus makes that glow that people see above the swamp. And people have tried to catch things on fire from it, but it emits in the visible, but it's from the phosphorus. It's very difficult to see in a controlled environment.
All right. So, okay. So what's your state? So how about breeding cow types reduce their methane output? No more bovine gas.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a great idea. The trouble is that that despite all this, from 2000 to 2006 or 2007, the amount of methane globally went down because of those little bugs in the soil, those methanotrophic bacteria. And so you generate more food for bugs, and the bugs increase. So and the amount of methane actually decreases.
What are the top, in your opinion, the top misconceptions about the environment or the climate versus the global warming fear mongers? What are some of the biggest misconceptions in your opinion?
Well, one of the ones is that, you know, you'll ask people, well, how much has the temperature increased since you were a little kid? And people say, oh, 6 or 7 degrees. Actually, based on the measurements in the satellites, there have been no increase since Bob Dole ran against Bill Clinton in 1996.
That's a fair number of years.
That's a fair number of years. And if you look at the state records, the state extreme maximum temperature records, what do we have? 50 states. And by far, in the Dust Bowl years, in the 1930s, I think 23 or 24 states set their all-time maximum temperature record back when the carbon dioxide was less than 300 parts per million. So this notion that that we're causing these extremes in temperatures are just not true. Just a couple of years ago, the all-time maximum set in the U.S. was set in California in 1913. I think it was 127 degrees. And that record still stands. That's incredible with all the methane and carbon dioxide that people are talking about. Why that record should be well over 100 years old and still standing and not even close to being broken.
All right. So the person who's the EPA administrator, Gina McCarthy, admitted that steps were being taken to reduce these toxic, so-called toxic gases. But that number one, they don't know how much is in the atmosphere of this stuff. Number two, all of the things that we did, the very expensive work that we were doing to fight global warming would only bring down the temperature 0.01 degrees.
That's true. That's true. And the accuracy of measurement is on the order of a half a degree. So, you know, you could not determine that in a room or in a person's lifetime.
Very good. Talking to Bob Endlich about the atmosphere and methane, heat sinks, bovine gas, which is, I think Hillary has sprung a fatal leak in her bovine gas producer. Hey, we've got a call here, but Hillary has just admitted she did send classified emails. So anyway, thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Good morning. Good morning, Kelly.
Tekashi, what's up?
How are you, man? How's it going?
Pretty good. It's the room's filling up with methane. We're getting warmer in here. What's going on with you?
Hey, I wanted to mention in the 1960s, I was watching a documentary the other night, and it was talking about how people were dying from smog in places like New York City and Los Angeles, like thousands of people before a lot of these stringent motor vehicles and so on and so forth. But I wanted to bring up that North Arctic deal that Obama is trying to push through with Shell and how a lot of that ice up there has melted.
All right. So what's your question that they're melting all the ice and what else?
Yeah, I wanted to say I beg to differ with the concept that the temperature hasn't increased, being that the places that people haven't been able to navigate in the North Arctic are now being navigated, and they're planning on drilling up there also.
Okay, so Tekashi, here's Bob Endlich to give you a response.
Tekashi, you're wrong. You're just flat wrong. I did a search on this about the idea that the Northwest Passage was going to open up and there's going to be new trade routes because of the incredible losses of ice in the Arctic Ocean. And it's just not true. Hold on.
Let him finish.
There have been a number of attempts to navigate through it, and people have had to be rescued because their vessels got stuck in the ice. So it's just flat not true. In recent years, the amount of Arctic ice has increased dramatically, about 30%.
Go ahead, Takashi.
I guess you're saying that's a conspiracy, the fact that they're now navigating those oceans that haven't been able to be crossed hundreds of years.
Takashi, there was a famous or a notorious, whatever you want to call it, situation where a ship went down to the South Pole to try to get proof of global warming. They got stuck in the ice. Another ship came to rescue them. That second ship got stuck in the ice. America had to send one of the world's biggest icebreakers to go down and rescue both of them. That's like 2 years ago. Yeah, that ship was called the Academic Schakowsky.
So you're saying this is a major conspiracy?
No, I'm not saying that, but I do have one more response to you. Are you ready?
Go ahead, buddy.
Thanks a lot for the call, Takashi. We'll talk to you later. All right, folks. Got to keep your wits about you. All right, so good call from Takashi. It's 7:41. You got Bob Endlich here talking. He's an expert on the weather. He's a weatherologist, climatologist. We'll be right back to continue on. It's 7:44, and we just had a call from Takashi that said that basically that the ice is melting on the poles, and basically, and I've got a little clip on this. There was a famous event that happened a year ago, 2 years ago, in which a ship went out to gather evidence of global warming. It got stuck in the South Pole. Then a Chinese icebreaker, I think the first ship was Russian. The second one was a Chinese icebreaker. It got stuck too. So the United States, who has some of the largest icebreakers in the world, had to go down there and rescue both of them. Here's a little clip.
U.S. Coast Guard icebreaker Polar Star is heading to the Antarctic to help free two ships stuck in thick ice. The ice trapped a Russian research vessel on Christmas Eve. The Chinese icebreaker that helped rescue that ship's 52 passengers found itself stuck in the heavy ice on Friday. That's your TPC News update.
All right. So this idea that the poles have been melting are melting and will be, they said that the North Pole was going to be free of ice at this time. A couple of years ago, and then the South Pole too. So they found that there's more ice on the North and South Pole than has ever been recorded. We've got another call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show.
I'm going to go with 2,500 International Panel of Climatologists who all say climate change is upon us.
Bob, well, climate change is always upon us. We've had periods when it's warmer than today, and significantly colder than today. If you look, you know, those people from the Intergovernmental Panel are, one, appointed by governments, and two, they have an axe to grind. They want to prove that carbon dioxide is a problem so the UN can create a tax on it. So they're not even brokers, and the even brokers who try to pull out are very vocal in that this that it's
but according to Frankie, everybody, there's the enlightened people who realize that there's global warming, and most of those are scientists, scientifically minded people, and the rest are just a bunch of yokels, rednecks who don't understand the idea of science. So you've got this massive group of science that supports global warming, and the rest are just a bunch of clowns.
Well, you know, the clue go ahead. Sorry, Frank.
Can I get a word in here? Let me say something. I mean, if I'm correct on this, whether they're intergovernmental or not, are they credible, educated climatologists? Are they?
My answer is no. Because
they are not.
Because they They are designed only to produce a fixed result, which is to tax carbon dioxide production from fossil fuels. They are not honest brokers.
All right, but here's my upshot. The whole biggest argument or problem I have with this whole thing. Somebody is right. Somebody is right. It either is or it isn't, and somebody needs to get off the old proverbial pot. Now, somebody's got to graduate from some university with a climatology degree that has no political axe to grind and multiply it by whatever number, and then get out there and say, yes, it is or it isn't. That's what needs to be done.
Bob, well, that would put one person in charge or a couple of people in charge. And, you know, that's not the way science works. Science works based on looking at the measurements, looking at the observations. We've only had liquid and glass thermometer measurements since the early 1800s. Well, we were coming out of the Little Ice Age then, so of course the temperatures are showing a rise. So we have to resort to what's called proxy measurements from the ice cores. If you look at the ice cores, you'll find that 3,500 years ago in the Minoan warm period, it was a lot warmer than today. 2,000 years ago in the Roman warm period, it was a lot warmer than today. 1,000 years ago in the medieval warm period, it was warmer than today. There are multiple proxy measurements to indicate that. So the present warming is a consequence of a natural cycle, a 1,000-year cycle called the Bond cycle, named for a guy named Gerhard Bond out of Columbia University. So where is the man-caused influence? Yes, there is some man-caused influence, but how much? It hasn't gotten warmer than it was 1,000 years ago, Frankie. Frankie.
Okay, well, you're absolutely right on that. I agree with you 100% because that is the big rub. I do not have a problem with the factors of universal global warming through the series, like you just said. But the impact of man, what is that doing? I mean, maybe before the 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 years ago cycle, it fixed itself. But because there wasn't the influence of man-made junk accelerating or extending it, maybe that's the problem.
Frankie, what about woman-made climate gases?
Well, I mean, it all depends if they had a can of beans the night before.
Well, there's the methane that I was talking about earlier. But, Frankie, the problem is, how do you separate out the man-caused part from the natural cycle? And I've been looking for the man-caused part, and I haven't been able to find it yet. Now, you could look at any number of data series. It certainly can't be very important because we're not as warm as we were 1,000 years ago.
Well, I don't know. Here's the thing, Doc. You know, I guess I got to call you Doctor because I forgot what your name was. So I'll call you Doc. Is that okay?
My name's Bob.
Oh, okay, Bob. All right, Dr. Bob. I don't know, and neither does anybody, you know, what the end result is. And since we have only one planet that we can inhabit, it's got to be pretty silly, you know, to be on the wrong side and find out, oops, you know, and you got nowhere to go.
Bob, or pardon me, Frankie, there's this statement from the government's own head of this thing that Obama appointed. Even if we spent this billions or trillions of dollars to halt global warming, it's only going to bring down the temperature 0.01 degree. Doesn't that seem like tilting at windmills?
No, I mean, it could provide jobs and stuff and investment opportunities. Matter of fact, I have a lot of positions in alternate energy corporations and stuff. So I got my skin in the game, as they would say.
Well, Frankie, consider this. 130,000 years ago, when carbon dioxide was 280 parts per million, it was about 5 or 6 degrees warmer than today. So if carbon dioxide had such a big deal, how could 130,000 years ago that it be 5 or 6 degrees warmer than today and sea levels were 15 feet higher than today? It just does not compute.
I don't know, Bob. Like I gotta say again, I'm not a scientist specifically to that. I just touched on the very, very base surface of what's going on, you know. So I mean, I would defer to you because you're the expert. But all I'm saying is I'm sitting out in the car right now and my head is starting to heat up because the sun is beating down on it, and it was getting hotter than it was last year or something.
That's called anecdotal evidence, isn't it, Bob?
Well, that's the reason we have people making measurements, writing them down every day, and recording them, and then we can look at those data. I've looked at the data for New Mexico, and there's no warming in the last 100 years.
Frankie, yeah, I've got to go. Very, very scintillating call. Thanks for the call. Have a great weekend. Folks, I've got to take a break here, and we'll be right back. Frankie has finally come against an immovable force, and he may be converted. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
I got you again, Kelly.
Hey, what's up, man? We're out of time almost.
I got a quick, important question, man.
Hold on. Don't talk over me. Hold on. It's Kelly. We're back for Bob Endlich, the weather guy, and Tekashi round two. Yeah, what's up, Tekashi? Tekashi, go ahead. Call back, Tekashi. I couldn't hear anything. All right, we just got a couple of minutes left. Bob, what do you want people to have in mind?
What I want people to have in mind is the fact that there are studies that show that the little bugs in the soil from the tropics to the Arctic have a voracious appetite and will eat the methane that that is produced.
Methane eaters. Go ahead, Tekashi.
Yes, sir. All right. Mr. Bob, it's said by 2018 that China is going to be completely out of resources of drinking water. I wanted to ask you if you could expound on that a little bit. And one more thing I wanted to mention. In my country, my native country in Jamaica, there's a spout spraying out of the mountainside in a parish called St. Thomas. It's been that way since I was a kid. That water went dry. That doesn't happen anymore. My mom called me from Jamaica and said, you know, that water that sprays out of the mountainside, it stopped completely, went dry. And I understand here in Las Cruces, up there in Dripping Springs, there used to be a spout just the same. So how do you break that down?
Thanks for the call, Tekashi. Yeah, well, go ahead. We got about 1 minute here.
Well, it's very obvious that we have natural periods of rainfall and drought, especially here in the desert. And we had a rather significant drought episode from 2011 to a year ago, and now we're in El Nino. The amount of rainfall that occurred in the first 6 months of 2015, this year, has been the fourth wettest on record. So it's just a natural phenomenon, and you need accurate measurements to determine where we are in the natural cycle.
And the China running out of water. Briefly,
you know, they've got to manage that themselves, and I'm not prepared to speak about the amount of water in China.
Thanks for coming on, Bob. We really appreciate it, and straighten us out on methane. Thanks for listening into the show, folks. I got a little live piano for you here, a little Elton John Tiny Dancer. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening in. We'll see you back in 2 days. Ciao.